I'm John Krall. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about crime in Indianapolis with the man whose job it is to combat it, Public Safety Director Troy Riggs. We're going to talk about the areas of the city and the ways in which Riggs and his team will combat crime. And we'll discuss what effects criminal code legislation that is before the Indiana General Assembly right now might affect the entire state. Please join this important conversation. Please call us toll-free at 866-476-3881. Email is nolimits@wfyi.org. Facebook is nolimitswfyi. And Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news.
No Limits is made possible by Apparatus, managing IT infrastructure so companies don't have to. It's advanced IT made simple. Learn more at apparatus.net.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking about crime and the ways you can combat it. Much of our focus is going to be on Indianapolis and Marion County safety, but there is going to be some application to the entire state. If you would like to join this important conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. Well, my guest, who is returning to the program, I think this is your third visit here, right?
I believe so.
Yes, it is the Indianapolis Director of Public Safety, Troy Riggs. Welcome back.
Well, thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure to be here.
It's good to have you here. Well, let's start. Obviously, 2014 was not a great year for homicides in Indiana, and that's spurred you and your team to look at some fairly aggressive and creative ways to combat these problems. First, let's talk about what happened in 2014 and then what we're going to do about it.
Right. Good point. Obviously, we had 135 deaths because of murder, where someone took someone else's life in 2014. That is a terrible number. It's terrible for our city. Certainly, it's something that we're concerned about within the Department of Public Safety and specifically Chief Hyde and IMPD. But what we've tried to do is we've tried to be a little bit more sophisticated in the way we look at our crime numbers. And if you look back to 2012, I arrived at the end of 2012, and the city had 96 homicides that year. That's still 96 too many, but certainly a whole lot better than 135. I got a little bit of trouble at the time when I said I was concerned about what appeared to be an increase in violent crime in the city of Indianapolis because people were focusing on that 96. What we're trying to say, as the Department of Public Safety and Chief Hyde has said this in numerous town halls around the city, is that we have to look at total shootings in our city. How many human beings were shot? The only difference between a homicide and a non-fatal shooting is, quite frankly, where the bullet landed. In most cases, the intent was always the same. People are surprised to learn that in 2012, when we had 96 homicides, we actually had more people shot in the city than we did in 2013 and 14. So we're starting to look at that and see where those shootings take place and how to focus on those. The problem, though, John, is what we're seeing is that we went from 96 to 125 to 135 homicides. So how in the world do we have 135 homicides when actual gun violence in the city is lower than it was in 2012? Well, we started looking at the data a little bit more and a little bit more intense, and what we found out is that in 2012, 70% of all suspects in homicides had a criminal history. 73% of victims in criminal homicides had a criminal history. Now you look at what we dealt with last year in 2014, 22% jump. 92% of all suspects have a criminal history. All murder suspects have 92% have a criminal history. The police department is doing a good job targeting the right people that have a propensity to commit violence, to put them in jail, only to have them come right back out on the streets again. We believe it's time for some mandatory minimum sentencing for those that use a weapon in a violent crime. The mayor has proposed that. If what the mayor has proposed was enacted, a few years ago, that would have meant last year we could have decreased our homicide rate if we just had a five-year mandatory minimum sentencing by upwards of 25%. If we had a 10-year mandatory minimum, it could be upwards of 34%. So there's a lot of work we need to do at the State House. There's a lot more work we need to do as a police department, Department of Public Safety, and quite frankly, as a community, because crime at times is usually the end result of a lot of other systemic issues. And we've been working very hard to address that with our nonprofits and social service partners.
How, when you say that if these changes, the mandatory minimum sentences, had been put through, that there would have been a 25% or higher reduction in the rate. How is that? Because those people, the people who pulled the trigger, would have been behind bars? Is that the argument?
That they would have been behind bars. Just, and think about that, just a five-year mandatory minimum. We have had instances, and there's been some changes in the code since then. It'll take some time to figure out how that transfers to this in the future, because there's not been enough years to pass. But I will tell you that we have instances where I think everyone remembers, and I wasn't here at the time at the Black Expo, where eight or nine people were shot.
Mm-hmm.
The individual that did those shootings, remember what I said a moment ago about non-fatal shooting and a homicide to us is the same, should be treated the same because the intent was to kill someone. By the grace of God, no one died that day in downtown Indianapolis. That individual that was in charge of that shooting that was charged with the shooting and prosecuted only spent 2.5 years behind bars. 2.5 years for shooting 8 human beings in downtown Indianapolis only because no one died. The home invasion on the north side that so shocked this city and should have shocked this city. The individual that led the ringleader in that home invasion had been sentenced to 16 years in prison for a violent felony with a weapon only to be out 783 days. Police department needs some assistance to hold some of these people behind bars. If they were originally charged, when we look back and we know that they were originally charged with a violent crime with a weapon, that, like I said, if we had a five-year mandatory minimum, either the victim, which 83% of the victims have criminal histories, and 92% of the suspects, either the victim or the suspect or both, would not have been on the street for that homicide to take place.
We are talking with Indianapolis Director of Public Safety Troy Riggs. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. So we've pretty well established here we got a problem, and it's a big one. In some ways, it's an escalating one. Do you have any before we leave that, though, I guess a question just occurred to me. You know, given that the overall the gun violence is going down in the city, but the number of homicides has grown almost by 50% in the past 2 years, right? If my math is correct, from 96 to 135.
Yeah, we were 135 last year, yes.
Yeah, so that's not quite 50%, but close increase. What accounts for that?
Well, when we looked at the, we broke down the data even more. When we looked at the increase in individuals with criminal histories, what we are finding now is that we actually had fewer homicide scenes in 2014 than we did in 13, meaning that police officers responded to a scene of a homicide. What we're seeing with those individuals with criminal histories that they are now, it looks like, targeting witnesses. They're trying to eradicate the witnesses. So deaths per incident have increased dramatically over the last year. And we're very concerned about that. And I think that is a reason to be concerned, but it's probably because 92% of the individuals have criminal histories. That's a 10% increase in victims per incident in just 1 year. Once again, shootings are lower than they were in 2012, but we have an increased people dying. One of the reasons is because more people are dying per scene. We need to wrap our arms around that. But as we talk about these things, we talk about mandatory minimum sentencing, we are not going to arrest our way out of this. And when you arrest someone, whether you have a five-year or 10-year mandatory minimum sentencing, they're still going to come back to the street someday. And here in Marion County, we are getting from the penitentiaries coming into Marion County, depending who you're listening to right now, they classify it a different way, 5,000 to 8,000 people coming to Marion County each and every year after serving time in prison. Now, what makes that even more profound is that only a third, or about a third of those, have never lived in Marion County before. They're coming here for services. So when we're talking about mandatory minimum sentencing, we're also over at the State House supporting first day in services in prison to make sure that people are getting the help they need, drug dependency, education, so that they can start the process of being successful in reintegrating into society, being a productive father or mother or citizen when they come out of prison. It makes more sense to start on day one of their incarceration than the first day out of jail. It's something we're extremely committed to.
What sort of reception have you gotten over at the State House? I know in this program we had Marion County Prosecutor Terry Curry on, and he indicated that legislators often didn't want to hear what he had to say about, you know, gun suggestions for reforming gun laws in the state or anything like that. What are people saying when you talk to them about some of these proposed reforms of the criminal code?
I think that they're starting to have more of an intense discussion, and that's a good thing. When I first arrived, there wasn't as much talk, but here recently there's more and more conversation. People are willing to listen on both sides, willing to talk about the issues. And I'll say this, Terry Curry's been a very good friend of mine. He's professionally and privately, he's been a great supporter and great help, and his voice, we talk constantly once or twice at least a month to talk about issues. And I'm certain that anything that we do, we try to get his input as well. But there were times that we felt like we weren't being listened to, but I think because of the numbers and because of the approach that we are taking as a Department of Public Safety with our partners like Mr. Curry and Sheriff Layton, and sitting down and looking at those systemic issues, more and more people are talking more broadly. And I think that's healthy, John, quite frankly, mm-hmm. for our community. If we realize these issues are not just the police issues, they're a community issue, then I think we're one step ahead of a lot of major cities in America as far as solving this issue.
We are talking about crime in Indianapolis and in Indiana to some degree here on No Limits. If you would like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Aaron, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon. I was just calling in because I wanted to ask Troy Riggs if he'd ever heard of restorative justice and what's being done within the Department of Corrections to use a program like that with inmates, because I know for a fact the funding was cut from one of those programs, and it's an extremely effective program that dropped crime within jails by, at the minimum, 60%.
Right. Thanks very much for the call and the question, Aaron.
Yeah, thank you very much. One, I am not in charge of the jail system, and I'm not in charge of what services go there, but we have been to the State House and asked for assistance, and just recently we sat down with the Sheriff's Office, our staffs did, and we're trying to figure out how to work with them when some legislation involves people in jail with mental illness. But that goes back to what I was saying a moment ago, first day in services. Mm-hmm. Badly need it, desperately need it, especially when you realize that 30% of all those that are incarcerated, just in Marion County Jail, Sheriff Layton gave us these numbers, 30% have some type of mental illness. What are we doing to get people assistance that they need rather than using the criminal system to prosecute someone because they have a mental illness?
I'm going to ask a tough question here, but these are not new issues or even discussion points. I mean, in this country, we've been talking for probably a half century about the fact that prisons all too often become finishing schools for hardened criminals. We send them in, and then they come back out even worse than they were before they went in. So what makes us think that this time it's going to be different?
Well, what we're trying to do in Indianapolis is and we'll talk about this a little bit later, but some of the six areas we're focused on and the people coming back in those areas, and start with a small geographical area and see what works. The other thing that is important, and this is my philosophy, is that I am not a big believer that government can do all this by itself. And that's what we've tried to do in the past. As we've said, government needs to have this program, government needs to do this. And I'm telling you that government programs do not work long term. I've got 25 years of working in government. I understand that. What we're talking about is a philosophical shift in the way we do government. We've talked to the White House about this, the Attorney General's office. We need to work as a community. We need to have social service partners. People that have a mental illness is in jail, each one of them need an advocate. each one of those individuals that are incarcerated that may not have a mental illness, they need an advocate. That's why it takes all of us in the community working together. That's why we're moving so much faster than other cities, and this is because this is new. We've not done this before.
We are talking about crime in Indianapolis and really in Indiana with Indianapolis Director of Public Safety, Troy Riggs. If you would like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. That's a toll-free number. You also can send us an email at nolimitswfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. I am John Kroll. You are listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking today about safety in Indianapolis and Marion County, and to some degree in the state. My guest is Indianapolis Director of Public Safety, Troy Riggs. I've gotten an email question from a listener named Jerry, and if you'd like to reach out to us by email, you can do so at nolimits@wfyi.org. Jerry says, since more cops, more incarceration, tougher laws, and longer sentences have not succeeded in enhancing public safety, what brand new ideas does the public safety director have for dealing with the root causes of crime in our community? How about better training for police to require them to become more aware of the needs and concerns of the community they serve and to enable them to deal nonviolently with transgressive individuals? How about better educational and employment opportunities for the poor? And very specifically, how does yesterday's city council vote on a homeless bill of rights fit into the agenda? How about better handgun regulation and real rehabilitation programs for offenders? There's a lot of questions.
That's a lot, but I will tell you, he's onto something with all of them. And that's why I say it's going to take all this. We started out because people want to know the numbers and understand what police department's doing. But a couple of things. One, with our police officers, they receive just incredible training. Our officers now, when you get on the police department, you have to receive what we call critical incident training, which is how to deal with people with mental illness. They receive training on how to de-escalate situations. Some of the officers that came on before that was mandatory, we're increasing their training. There will be a time in our future where all of our officers will have that type of specific training. So we're working there. We've worked with our Public Safety Foundation to train all of our first-line supervisors at a level that's higher. We want to have the best first-line supervisors in America. We have revamped our complaint process on police officers, how we investigate administrative complaints and criminal complaints. We're doing all these things. Now, when you talk about some of the issues regarding the systemic issues, I would invite the listener and any listener to go to our website for the Department of Public Safety in the city of Indianapolis and look at our data that we've pulled, where we're looking at all kinds of systemic issues. The overdose rate, vacant housing in some of our areas, education levels, expulsions, mental illness. This seems to be a growing problem and something we have to deal with in major cities. So we're trying to deal with all these issues, everything from truancy to reentry and all the issues associated with it in between. And that's why I said government cannot do all of this by itself. It has to be a community effort. We are having community conversations. We're out in the community talking to hundreds of people at a time. Sometimes it's just around a coffee table, having some coffee and talking about the issues in that neighborhood. But we are opening ourselves up as a Department of Public Safety for more input. But let me be clear, if we're going to be successful as a city, it's going to take social service partners, churches, houses of faith, all of us working together on these issues. And some of these issues, John, are deeply rooted, and they're difficult, and there's no easy fix. Anyone that says we can do this one thing or this one program, it's not going to work. It's going to take all of us working together doing our fair share.
We just had Bill Stanjakovich, president and CEO of the Indiana Youth Institute, talking about his Kids Count data book, or his organization's Kids Count data book, 2015. And I think this serves Jerry's question serves as a springboard for this. I mean, how much of this, when we talk about crime, is a question of dealing with the symptoms rather than the root cause? I mean, he shows that data book, the evidence in there, some of it was pretty alarming, that, you know, more than 22% of the state's children live in poverty, that we lead the nation in the number of young people who contemplate suicide. I mean, it sounds like there's an awful lot of despair out there.
There really is. One of the things that I heard recently from Dr. Kane with Marion County Health Department in her survey that she did is that our young people suffer from basically days of depression or feeling really down four times greater than the national average. Mm-hmm. When you also realize that 50% of our young people in our city will get our high school diploma, it's 50% that's not. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's troublesome for us for our future. And Bill's has some good data, and they do great work. And I think that what he's doing and what others are doing, we have to talk about our long term. We're talking about crime because of 135 homicides, and
yeah.
We should be.
Yeah.
But when you look at our crime numbers last year, we were actually down in Part 1 crimes, which are the most violent, the ones that affect burglaries and things, double-digit decreases. But we focus on that. Shootings are down compared to what they were in 2012. This year so far, through February, homicides are down 40%. But here's the issue, John. We were saying the same thing we did back when I first arrived in 2012, got me a little bit of hot water. The systemic issues still exist. Things can get much worse for a city like Indianapolis if we don't deal with these root causes. Bill's absolutely correct. We have to do something about these issues. We have to make sure that every young person in this community has an opportunity to succeed. It's not our responsibility as adults and citizens to make someone succeed. It's to give them the opportunity to succeed. And when you look at some of the things that these young people are dealing with, I don't know if we can really say they have an opportunity to succeed.
We are talking with Indianapolis Public Safety Director Troy Riggs. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Jim, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
I was just wondering if Director Riggs could somehow help us with some of the systemic people that have been coming and ravishing our near south side neighborhood of breaking in houses and stealing copper and aluminum siding and metals and just putting them in city garbage cans and going down alleys and taking them to a couple significant scrap yards and using the city facilities to do that and have some kind of control over some of these buyers that are buying this stuff, knowing full well that some of this stuff is wiring and scrap and aluminum has been stolen.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Jim.
I don't want to get too much into it. I will say that Chief Hyde has talked about this very issue, not just on the south side, but throughout the city where it spikes occasionally. Sometimes people are doing it to get money for heroin, and we know that heroin is on the rise across this nation. So he is working on that and working with some of the local law enforcement partners as well. I will share your concerns with him and the police department, especially our commander on the south side. I will tell you, though, if you have some specifics you'd like to share or anyone has a question that you don't get to today, our email address is DPS for Department of Public Safety, dps@indy.gov, and that'll come to a person in my office, and I promise you will get some feedback.
We probably ought to talk now because one of the things, because the numbers were where they are in 2014, come up with a plan to combat that and some fairly aggressive goals. You said you wanted a 5% reduction rate in the number of homicides, if I'm not mistaken?
Pretty much in the focus areas that we have looked at because of our crime data that we pulled together and some systemic issues, 5% reduction in crime across the board on major violent-type crime.
Mm-hmm. So how did you choose the six areas? Well, let's start first. What are the six areas you're going to be focusing on, and then how did you choose them?
Well, one of the things we wanted to do was take the data that we had. And now, remember, when I got here in 2012, our data wasn't all that great.
Mm-hmm.
We had to rebuild some of the systems or build them from scratch. So we have that. A lot of the data you're getting today, brand new, never been shared in the city because it hadn't existed. But we looked at our data that we cleaned up from 2013, January 2013 through August of 2014, we thought we had some pretty firm data. We began with crime data. And Chief Hyde put his crew on that, and they started looking at it. We came up with six areas where we thought that some of the crime issues were hindering the quality of life for our residents. And those six areas quickly are 16th in Tibbs, 29th in MLK, 34th in Illinois, 38th in Sherman, 42nd in Post, and New York in Sherman. And what we said, we're not saying these are horrible areas. There are other areas in town that have challenges as well. But what we're saying is we think we can do better as a Department of Public Safety, and we certainly know that our citizens deserve better. Because when you put these areas together, John, you're talking about 42,000 of our residents and friends. Mm-hmm. 42,000 human beings live here. A great majority are just trying to get by each and every day, live the American dream. But where these 42,000 of our neighbors live, that's 8 square miles, represents 8 square miles. If you live in these areas, you live in an area that is 595% greater likelihood of having a criminal homicide than anywhere else in the city of Indianapolis. It has an over 600% greater likelihood of having a non-fatal shooting than anywhere else in Indianapolis. And then you start looking at some of the other systemic issues, 239% greater likelihood of somebody suffering from a mental illness in this area. 27% of all of our homicides occur where 4.7% of our population lives, 30% of our non-fatal shootings. So we've decided we're going to focus here, not just with enforcement. If you look at what we've done, a lot of it's been services, youth activities, raising money for youth to have alternatives during the long breaks, Christmas break, and different things that they've had. So we're working all different avenues to try to provide for individuals. We think that if we can deal with some of these systemic issues, that we're going to see crime go down, quality of life increase. Now, let me say this. How do you say, as a Department of Public Safety, you're being successful in these areas? Well, one is if violent crime decreases, you've got some short-term success there. The other thing is quality of life calls, burglaries, small thefts. If they increase in an area, that's not necessarily a bad thing. That means that people are now trusting their police department. They're calling their police department. But I don't want you to just think of this as a police initiative. This is a philosophical shift, and all eight divisions of the Department of Public Safety have goals and objectives for these areas. So the fire departments open up the firehouses and saying, come to the firehouse if you need assistance. We found out in one of our conversations with residents that they had an individual suffering from a medical issue, and they drove them to the hospital. They passed like four firehouses that could potentially have saved that person's life. They did not realize that at the firehouses we have EMTs that could have helped, and they drove past that. We want to make sure, and Chief Ernest Malone with the fire departments opened those firehouses. Now, when they open those for people to come and see and give out things to the kids and talk about smoke plans and give fire detectors, now we're starting to incorporate some people from community health, Eskenazi. They can talk about mental illness. People to come in and talk about dependency issues. If you have someone that's incarcerated, what help is available to you? So we're trying to do all those wraparound services as well.
You've alluded to the fact that a couple of times that, you know, certain things mean that people are beginning to trust the police department. I think the first time you were on this program, you talked about what a challenge that was to get people, because of some high-profile incidents in which, you know, public safety officers had not behaved well. I'll just leave it at that. That restoring public trust in law enforcement was a top priority. Where are you in those efforts? Do you see, is it still an issue that you have to deal with or combat, or where are we?
It certainly is an issue, and that's one of the things that we've talked about, is that every day we have to earn people's trust and respect. And, John, you have to realize that out of the individuals that get shot in this community, the non-fatal shootings, over 40% refuse to cooperate with police. That's disappointing to us. We want to make sure people feel like the police are there to assist. And I know Chief Hyde spends extraordinary amounts of time in the community. But not only is the chief out there, but he has his workforce out there as well, meeting, earning respect every day. And one of the things that the story hadn't really been told as much as we'd like for it to be told is that we revamped our whole complaint process on police officers to make it easier and more timely when you file a complaint on police officers. And here's the ironic thing. The police officers that we talk to wanted this as well. They don't want something hanging over their head. If they've done nothing wrong, they want to be exonerated sooner rather than later. And, quite frankly, if somebody's done something wrong, they want them to be punished and held accountable. They don't want their badge tarnished by someone doing something silly. We've purchased new software to track officers' behavior when they've been complained on. Before, you may get three or four complaints, but if you weren't working for the same sergeant, no one may know. That's no longer the case. We've fixed that. We've changed the way we do administrative investigations. So if an officer's complained on for speeding or rudeness, that's administrative. But what happens if they do something that's illegal? It's a whole different investigative process. We've revamped all of that, and I can't say enough about Chief Height and all the work that he's done and the outside individuals like Manny Mendez that helped us put this together. We are leading the country in a lot of ways in this. As a matter of fact, we haven't made this public yet, but it looks like by the end of this month or early next month, our city will be one of a handful invited to the White House to talk about how we've revamped and what we've done to make our process more transparent and open to the public and for scrutiny.
We are talking with Indianapolis Public Safety Director Troy Riggs. If you would like to join the program, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. Diane, welcome to No Limits.
Hello. Good afternoon to you both.
Good afternoon to you. What's on your mind?
I have a comment and a couple of other things I'd like to ask about. I'd like to know when government ceased becoming regarded as the expression of community. When we say that government can't solve most of these problems, it's as though people have a negative attitude about what their government is, as though it is not the expression of our community. The second thing I'd like to say is I live in the neighborhood where the home invasion took place. I appreciate Chief Hyde and his other representatives coming out and speaking to our neighborhood organizations. I leave my lights on. I'm more careful about locking my doors. I keep my eye out for my neighborhood, so I appreciate that. And people in our neighborhood will be down attending this trial in the next couple of days. The third thing I'd like to say is I know a man who has some mental problems, some limitation on his intelligence, but not much. He was walking down the street yelling. Somebody reported it to the police. The police scared him. He went to jail for a while. Our community came out to support him. He was fined $400 and told to go to a parole officer. He told the people in the community that he had been going to the parole officer because he had no way to pay $400 for this fine, and he has now been arrested again. He did nothing as far as that was criminal. So what I'm wondering, the question here is, as I understand it, he is in a for-profit jail. What incentive does a poor for-profit jail have to let this poor man out?
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Diane.
Great question on the mental illness piece. Let me just say this is I feel for that man, and that's why I said we train our officers in critical incident training. But sometimes their only option when they de-escalate a situation is take a person to jail because we have nowhere to take someone with mental illness. So that's why we've asked Sheriff Layton and his very capable staff to really look at the mental illness issue with us, because we know from experience and talking to them that they deal with this all the time in the jail. And what we're trying to do and put together, and we're getting very close, and some people call it an engagement center, some other people call it other names, but basically what it is if we have somebody with mental illness and Chief Height's officers pick one of those individuals up and they've said they have a mental illness, they can take them to what we call an engagement center and takes them completely out of the judicial system and puts them into an area where they can get help, where they can get some medication potentially, and they can get an advocate to help them get back on the right track so that we're not criminalizing their mental illness. So I feel very, very sad for that individual. Certainly if we've got crime victim assistance and things, and this is an individual, be a little bit different. But if the caller would love to send us an email, we can certainly look into it and see if we can work with the court system to get them in contact with the right individuals.
We are talking about crime in Indianapolis and Indiana with Indianapolis Public Safety Director Troy Riggs. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today with Indianapolis Director of Public Safety Troy Riggs about crime in this city and state and ways that we can combat it. If you'd like to give us a buzz and join the conversation, you can do so at 866-476-3881. Ron, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
Well, once again, John, you've touched my buttons. I've reached the age of 65 years, and I have a lot of opinions on a lot of things. As Diane alluded to in her call, the prison system has become big business in this country. I see that as a problem. But on the rest, it seems to me, while everything that the gentleman is speaking about, programs and such, are all commendable. I have a tendency to connect dots and then cut to the bottom line. And for me, with most of the crime I see in this country and in this state, the bottom line is a lack of good-paying jobs. I can't believe any individual of a good, decent intelligence would want to go to prison rather than go to a job every day. And I've thought for years, you know, God forbid, if I were ever to lose my job, I might be one of those individuals on the wrong side of the law if I couldn't afford to feed my family and they were suffering. I just spoke the other day to a woman whose husband lost his job after he's 3 years without a job. He had a good paying job and depression set in. And I see that maybe it's specifically to men that once they lose a job, mental health problems set in. And this gentleman is talking about suicide. And I've seen it in other males where they lose a job and they're out on the edge. And that's, I don't know what we do about getting good paying jobs back, but I think that would resolve a lot of issues we have in this world today.
Thank you very much for the call, Ron.
Bye.
How much of this is, you know, in several programs, I mean, the one with Bill Stanjakovich, also one with the Indiana Institute for Working Families, the theme was also kind of the pressure on the middle class right now and the fact that many people are feeling concern, almost panic about, you know, dropping out of their lifestyles, having the bottom fall out from under them.
People are fearful. I think as we talk about this economy that's increasing, and it seems to be fairly rapid here, it doesn't seem to be hitting the middle class as well as we would hope for it to in the nation. And then you look at individuals in our city, and you talk about having the opportunity for jobs. Mm-hmm. If 50% of our young people are getting diplomas and 50% aren't, that's an issue for us long-term for the economic viability of Indianapolis. Those are the issues we have to deal with and we have to work on. So when we're looking at education attainment, we are being told by recent studies that if you do not have a college degree, this takes out trade schools. This mm-hmm. is not talking about this, just talking about college. If you do not have a college degree, graduating 2015, your chances to get a middle income class job decrease rapidly. In some of these areas we're talking about, John, 86% of the people live there do not have a college degree. And what's ironic, for the households that make $75,000 or more in these six areas that we've looked mm-hmm. at, the percentage of those making $75,000 or more are always within one percentage point of those that have a college degree.
This is kind of a complicated question, but, you know, right now the General Assembly is taking a look at a proposed state budget for the next couple of years that would change the school funding formula. And I'm oversimplifying to a degree, but a lot of the shift, it would redirect money, provide more money for suburban school systems in particular, and less, at least proportionally, for urban school systems, which sounds like the kind of people that you're talking about right here. Is that going to make your job harder or easier if that becomes law?
It could. I mean, we don't know, and I don't know enough about how that's going to affect the finances. I can tell you that in our discussions with educators, and mm-hmm. when I say I'm talking about the teachers on the front lines,
mm-hmm.
and when we have twice a month, we meet about data, and we have mm-hmm. guests to come and talk. And what the teachers tell us, they never talk about lack of funding. They talk about a lack of involvement from mm-hmm. parents. Mm-hmm. They talk about a lack of involvement from those in the community to help these young people. So the funding's always a big issue. It seems to me, though, after talking to a lot of these teachers, the bigger issue and the bigger void is having enough people that are willing to roll up their sleeves and volunteer and assist and do things. And because of some information we heard from a first-grade teacher, we've decided within the Department of Public Safety, we have 3,200 employees. Once a quarter, we're going to really try to utilize the day of service that Lilly does and mm-hmm. do something along those lines with our employees that are willing to do it. And one of the things we're hoping they'll do is get in these six areas and help with some of the young people.
We are talking with Indianapolis Director of Public Safety, Troy Riggs. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Art, welcome to the program.
Thank you. From root causes to reentry and all the things we've been talking about the last 15 or 20 minutes, it seems to me critically necessary and intuitively obvious that the Indianapolis community has to get much more involved. And maybe I know that there were studies done of best practices nationwide. They've been reported on maybe in the Diane Rehm Show or what, maybe 3, 4, 5, 6 years ago, and they were already making substantial progress, remarkable progress. I would assume that probably by now we have tracked all those and we see that they're continuing to make progress or have had problems or have found ways to overcome their problems and continue to be successful, superior programs. Well, it seemed to me that the Public Safety Department would be a critical catalyst for the community in being able to bring all the larger and smaller churches and churches that have churches that they work with in the inner city to try to leverage the resources that they have with the needs of the smaller churches in the critical areas, not just that it should be church-based by any stretch of the imagination. It should be whatever it takes to get the job done. But it's going to take people getting involved both at their home level to help address root causes at their home level. It's going to take a fundamental refashioning of priorities in life and education for all of our members of our community in order to bring us all together to address this problem, which is a systemic problem we have to deal with.
Thanks very much for the call and the comment. I'm going to give Director Riggs a chance to respond.
I think it's a great comment and some great ideas there. And let me say this before I really dive into what he's talking about, especially with the faith-based organizations, is that we are having these conversations twice a month, mm-hmm. and this has only been really going on since January. We've already had some great wins. We're seeing some lives change. We had a person that life was saved because of some of the work we've done. But if you're interested in attending these meetings, learning about them, getting on the mailing list, dps@indy.gov will put you on that list. We'll tell you when the next meeting's coming up, what the topics are. You may be interested in showing up. Now, as far as the faith-based community, extremely important. We are very fortunate and blessed, I'll use that since we're talking about faith-based, to have numerous faith-based organizations that have stepped up. There is a faith-based organization that gave $12,000 just the other day to the Public Safety Foundation for doing work in these six areas. There is the faith-based organization of City Mosaic that represents a great deal of church and is partnering these churches out in the suburban parts of our city with inner-city churches, and they're working together. They represent 50,000 parishioners. They're coming to our data meetings. They're talking about how they're going to be helpful. College Park works with a group called Purposeful Design, where we have people that had been homeless, and some of them had used heroin in the past, and helping them get on their feet by making furniture and selling that furniture and getting good paying jobs as a result to get themselves back on their feet. So there's a lot of good work that the faith-based organizations are doing. We need more and more to come on board to help with this because, once again, we need advocates for individuals. We need people that are going in and help people, roll up their sleeves and work, give. You know, some people like to give, then give. If you want to roll up your sleeves, roll up your sleeves and work. Work for any one of these numerous organizations. United Way is a good place to go, CICF. There's numerous organizations, small organizations. Just get involved in your community. That's the important part. This is our city. If we want it to continue to be the economic engine of the Midwest, we have to continue to be involved.
And I want to give you a chance also to perhaps clarify your position in regard to the point I think the caller named Diane made about how she was getting tired of people saying that government couldn't do things, that when did government stop being an expression of the public or popular. Well, that isn't necessarily what I heard you saying. What I heard you saying is there's a different approach to government and that government should be at some level coordinating across-the-board community efforts.
Yes, and thank you. I meant to address that, and I forgot, so thank you, John. Yes, government has a big role in addressing a lot of these issues and has a big role in coordinating activity. For instance, there's a lot of individuals that do reentry. People are coming from prison. One of the things they've asked us is to help coordinate activities so they can be more efficient and effective. We're willing to do that. Our goal within Department of Public Safety is we want to lead when we need to lead, follow when we need to follow, support when we need to support. That's an active government that's responsible to the people that it serves. That's what we're talking about. Government should be responsible and should be accountable to the citizens, all citizens, regardless where you live in the city.
We have got a full bank of callers here, so I'm going to ask everyone to try to keep your questions and your comments tight so we can give as many people a chance as possible. Jackie, welcome to the program.
Hi. Thanks for the program. I wanted to just encourage people regarding mental health. I want to encourage people to look for a local mental health first aid class so that if somebody in the neighborhood looks like they're experiencing problems, you'll know what to do and know who to call. That's it.
Thanks very much for the call and the comment.
Thank you.
How much of this is also getting the community involved in the responsibilities of, if not policing, at least noticing?
We're going to be successful or we're going to fail based on the partnership we have with the community. If the community's involved, we're going to be successful. And we are going to be successful. Think of all the things that this city has rallied around and helped in the past. I see that same community-minded spirit coming together on this, and we're very optimistic with all the partners we have, and we're very optimistic for the future of our city and the future of public safety.
Carol, welcome to the program.
Did you say Carol?
Yes, I did.
Okay, yeah. I have two things. One's a comment on the gentleman who said that jobs was the answer. I totally disagree with him. Jobs is part of the answer, but I think a big, much bigger part of the answer is the fact that people are not, children they are not well-parented, their parents were not well-parented, and it makes it a vicious circle. And the other thing I have is a question. What on earth made them allow Eskenazi to build a hospital with no mental health units, so there's no place to put people on 72-hour hold? They have to go to jail.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Carol.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you that Eskenazi has been extremely helpful with us when crafting how we're going to deal with mental illness in the future. So they have been very involved and continue to have conversations with us, everything from the engagement center that I spoke about earlier to even potentially looking at how to train our officers better in the future as well.
We've gotten an email from a listener named Randolph who says, individuals with uncontrolled mental illness can be taken to Eskenazi ER for admission to the psychiatric unit on a 72-hour hold, which does not include weekend days, for evaluation and treatment. Before the 72-hour hold expires, the issue goes in front of a judge for further treatment or disposition without involving jails. Fair point?
Yes, fair point. But we still have the issue with, do we have enough services and enough facilities for the amount of people that have mental illness, especially when we have 30% in our jail right now that have some type of mental illness?
We are talking about crime in Indianapolis and Indiana with Public Safety Director Troy Riggs. Eric, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Certainly.
In order to keep this brief, I just had a brief question. I've heard a lot of discussion about what the issues that we're facing are, and a lot of them seem very numerous, and I completely agree that understanding them is the first step. But a lot of them seem more or less out of the purview of the public safety director, things like income inequality and things of that nature. So I was really curious as to what specific steps Director Riggs has planned on taking initially with this data that he has gathered and where he sees that going. Thank you.
Thanks very much for the call.
Yeah, that is a very good question, and I get asked that quite frequently. Let me say this, is that we have goals and objectives for the entire city, for all of our eight departments. They also have goals and objectives specifically for these areas. But if we want to talk about public safety, as I said, we need to be more sophisticated with data. We also need to be more sophisticated in the way we look at public safety. Even though I'm not directly involved in education, even though I'm not directly involved in mental health services, I know as a public safety director that if we want to see the quality of life in this community enhanced and crime to be lowered, we have to be serious about these issues. So I have to be involved, and our departments have to be involved in that discussion, and we need to support those individuals the best we can that are doing the good work. It's not the work that we have to do directly, but this is one of those instances we need to support because we know the long-term benefit to public safety is there. It's a different way of looking at it. I know that, but we've been looking at it in terms of arresting and prosecuting for decades now, and we need to make sure that we continue that because that's important short-term, but for long-term success, as public safety, we need to be involved and be better partners with these other groups that have been doing this work for many years.
This is an election year here in Indianapolis. I've got to assume that makes your task a little more complicated, not knowing who's going to be your boss a year from now.
Well, it could, or, you know, and there's a lot of us that we have no idea if we'll still be in those positions. What we're trying to do, though, is develop something that outlasts us. That should be the goal of any good person that works in government, is to come up with something that makes such good sense, that's so community-driven, that it outlasts you no matter who gets elected or who's in that part, that you leave them a good foundation to build upon. And I believe that what we've built is a good foundation that can be built upon, and certainly well-meaning people coming in would continue that.
We're getting close on time, so I'm going to try to make this simple. What's one concrete way you're going to see that this targeted approach to addressing violent crime is working?
One concrete way, I mean, obviously the data, but one that's that may be odd that you think when you think concrete way is when I go in these areas and I have people coming up to me and asking me questions about what's the fire department or police department or animal care control doing about this quality of life issue. When I show up at a neighborhood that traditionally doesn't call if they have homicides, but now all of a sudden they're talking about those quality of life issues, I know that we've gained the respect and the trust of those residents, and that's what we need. We need to be held accountable by them. That's a healthy community.
Well, that'll have to be the last word. I'd like to thank my guest, Director of Public Safety, Troy Riggs. Always a pleasure to talk with
you. Thank you.
And I'd like to thank all of our listeners. Please come back. Join us again on Thursday when we're going to have State Representative Christina Hale talking about teen sexual assault here. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive Producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Terzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.